Welcome to Sports Central. I'm Rick Drewer.
I'm Phil Fechner.
Well, welcome back, Phil. We've both been on the sick list, but I guess it's a bit better to be late than never.
Yes, no, we both had the flu pretty heavy, Rick. I had a week off work last week and just getting over it now.
Yep, well, I think I'm in exactly the same category as you, but we're both alive and breathing, so that's the main thing, isn't it?
Better have an apology if we have a few coughs during this. So
what a good comment to make. Well, I reckon we've got no choice but to have a quick look at the BL&G finals, which we both witnessed sitting next to each other on Saturday.
Yeah, and a couple cracker games. Obviously, the wind did affect it, Rick, as we both know, it was blowing a gale up there at Newry. But the first game we had on at 9:15 in the morning was Newry versus Willesden, and Newry coming into the game with a 35 win in a row. They were tipped to win this one quite easily, weren't they, really?
Well, they were not only tipped, but a number of the supposed scribes, particularly as I read it in the Barracker, thought that it was just going to be a one-sided affair. But it was strange because, I mean, in technically, of course, it should have been. Not only did they win those 35 games in a row, as you've said, but they actually won the last minor round game against Willesden by 10 goals.
Yeah, I actually saw that game, and it was just a very one-sided game. And I wouldn't like to say, but it looked like a similar side, Willesden side out there Saturday than it was when they got beaten. So they have just turned it around.
Well, I think, and I mean, you'll have your version of the story as well, but I just thought that from the go-get, for whatever set of reasons, it was almost as if Newry just stepped off on the wrong foot and never got back into marching time. And it was an arm wrestle. You know, the scores were equal at quarter time, and I think there was one goal in front to Willesden at half time. And I don't know who it was who created that concept that the third quarter is the premiership quarter, but boy, oh boy, it was. Mm. And they blew it apart there, or at least cracked the game open with three goals to, I think, 2 points. And it was Red Rover from there because the wind prevented high scoring. And I don't know whether you agree, but I don't think Willesden ever looked like getting beaten, actually.
No, I've got to agree. They just always that step in front of Newry, weren't they? And bigger bodies, yeah. A lot bigger bodies. Never noticed it during the year. I'd umpired both these sides during the year, and I'd never noticed it, but they were just bigger bodies. And while we're on bigger bodies, the Mick and Medalist, which is the best on ground, was won by Corey Smith from Willesden, who played a cracker game.
Oh, he was. I was fortunate enough to do the report for the Bunyip for this, and I actually picked him, and I was pleased that they chose him as well. But I think he was well and truly outstanding. And they, you know, they had their other couple of big boys, Max Fraser and so forth, yeah, to kick the goals. But yep. Number 22, he was fantastic.
He was, yeah, and well deserved the Mick and medal.
Yep.
All right, well, it was on to the next game, the under-17s. Again, Willesden were the best side all year, or ended up top. Newry just snuck into the four. And only fell over the line last the week before, the previous week, against Tanunda, last kick of the day. And, well, they've come out and they've knocked them off.
Yeah. It is remarkable, isn't it, that, you know, we talk about it all the time, but you have a minor round that goes for umpteen dozen weeks, and then all of a sudden that's all over and it's a new season. And it's a season of about 3 or 4 weeks, depending on the formula used. And anything can happen. There's no guarantees, is there, wherever you finished in the minor at the end of the minor round?
No, and I heard a whisper, a couple of the Willesden boys during the week were a little bit undisciplined. There was a couple of training things they missed, and I just heard on the grapevine during the week that it wasn't quite all beer and Skittles there. But I do have to mention,
maybe it was beer and Skittles.
Yeah, well, I think that was involved. I do have to mention the Tobit medalist, absolutely outstanding. One of the best halves of football I'd ever seen out of a player, and he ended up finishing off with 10 goals, but he kicked 8 goals, 1 till half time, and that's Mitchell Norton. Played quite a few games in the A grade down back this year for Newry, but he's a forward. He's been playing forward in the Colts when he comes back, and he's 10 beautiful goals, and you were there to witness them too.
I mean, he was straight ahead. I mean, he was the difference, really. The fact is he kicked more off his own boot than the opposition got altogether. And physically, mentally, and obviously experience having played A grade was too good for that comp, really.
Very clever. You know, it's just his body positioning and, you know, out-bodying the people. Yeah. And it was just really good to watch a young lad like that. And whether he goes on with his footy or... You never know.
You don't, but he's, well, at this point in time, he's given himself every chance anyway.
Yeah, so Newry winning that game quite comfortably.
And then the B grade, well, that created history.
Yeah, Angaston, 120-odd years of never winning a flag, and they broke the drought. And, yeah, it was good to see. I mean, well, that's what footy's all about, isn't it?
It is, and they had a large supporter contingent there too, which
they did.
I think the boys would have got pretty happy afterwards, I would think.
And I'll just quickly go to the better players. Was the Jack Gleski medalist was young Jaden Anthony, or Antony, however you want to pronounce it, played a cracker. We didn't see quite all of that game. We had a lunch and we had to...
Well, these things you just have to do occasionally.
Yeah, so we
you?
Did miss a quarter and a bit, but he was certainly outstanding the time that we saw. And for Tanunda, young Sam Dunn, the big tall ruckman, I thought he was probably their best. But great to see, you know, Angaston getting over the line.
It is. It is, particularly since they've had such a pretty down couple of seasons in A grade. It's wonderful to see them win a B grade premiership.
Yeah, it's funny to see that though, isn't it? Like the A grade finishes bottom and the B grade finishes top.
Yeah.
You know, how does that work? The depth is obviously there, but, you know, just taking that next step to get to A grade. And of course, the main game was Barossa versus Kapunda. It was always going to be a cracker game. Win, as we said, killed it, but
it did, and I really do think that you know, the win, it's a horrible thing because I think wind destroys football more than rain or anything else, and it really did ruin what I think could have been a very good game. And it was tight, and in fact Kapunda couldn't have done much more. I mean, they were really the underdog, and rightfully so, but they put on a pretty good performance, I think.
Yeah, their start. It was a start that probably killed them. It was 6-1 there at one stage, and I think it was just about all over. And to their credit, they came back
hit the front. And they were in front of
2.5 goals at three-quarter time. Yeah. But as we said, I think, Rick, they tried to defend that 2.5 goals, and you can't do that.
As I think when we were talking together, you know, that lead of 2.5 goals, given the conditions and where the wind was blowing to, was not enough to be able to sit on a lead. And, I mean, they hung on. To be fair to them, they got through about half that last quarter, but it was never going to happen.
Well, Bross had kicked about 5 or 6 behinds in a row.
If they'd
and,
kicked...
Big Shillaby, you know, just going to mind, he took 2 big marks, 2 points.
Yep.
You know, so... Sorry.
Oh, the reality is that if they'd kicked straight in the first 10 minutes, the game was Red Rover then.
Spot on. And the Hearn medalist was big Todd Miles. He played an absolute sensational game, and I think you picked that too.
It's fine. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes, I did.
I've got to give you some credit.
Yeah. And, you know, it only goes to show, doesn't it, that maybe getting injured for a portion of the season, you come back fresh as a daisy and... Since he's come back, he's played a couple of rippers, really. And what better can the coach do than... well, he was acting captain for the day as well. And he definitely deserved the Guernsey.
Absolutely. And Lance Kent down back played a cracker game, number 25. He was good down there. And I thought Obstey done pretty well too for the limited... you know, for a big tall forward, it wasn't a big forwards day, but I thought he battled pretty well.
And I thought Todd handled him very well because he actually dropped him back and played him as a loose man in defence in that second quarter, which I thought was a pretty smart move to do. But so there you go. That's all over for another season.
Yeah.
No, well, what about the AFL, Phil?
Well, here we go. We've got grand final this week, but we'll go back to the previous week, Geelong and the Crows. Yeah, I mean, they played some sensational footy, didn't they, the Crows?
Their passing and foot skills were everything that Port hasn't been for the entire year. You never know, do you? I mean, the tactics in a game, the week before Geelong threw Dangerfield forward, They got the ball out of the centre and he's kicked goals within minutes of the start. They did the same thing this week, but they forgot that you've got to get the ball out of the centre and get it down to him before anything happens, and it didn't. And possibly with hindsight, you could say, well, the midfield of the Crows was going to always be a bit better than Sydney, although that's a pretty big statement to make. But they killed them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I was quite envious of their form. They were head and shoulders above any team I've seen this year. And
it was also interesting that, with all due respect to the blokes I'm going to mention, that Walker and Betts really played very little in the game.
Big impact.
No, and so that augurs well for their grand final appearance.
Yeah, so you've got Charlie Cameron who kicked five. Yeah. I mean, he stepped up. Yeah. Whether he does this week, who knows? He might have played his grand final last week. That can happen.
Yep.
And then I didn't see much of the Richmond GWS game, I've got to be honest, but obviously Richmond, quite convincing, got over the line.
Oh, they did. I mean, Richmond, it's funny, isn't it? Greater Western Sydney, by technical calculation, should be the best side in the comp by a mile, with every second bloke being a number one draft pick. But there's somehow that blend of maturity and experience still isn't there, and it only goes to show that talent can only take you so far. And desire and the fact that Richmond can't remember the last time they played in a grand final was a big incentive, and Richmond won comfortably.
Yeah, yeah, 30-odd points, I think.
Grand final, what do you think?
Well, I've got to go to the Crows. I don't want to. I really love to see Richmond win. The Crows are the best side I've seen this year, and the last few weeks they've really stepped up another notch, I reckon.
So. Well, I don't know whether it was deliberately done, but, their last couple of games in the minor round, the Crows looked as though maybe they tapered off and I mean, not literally relaxed, but their last couple of performances have been absolutely red hot. But as we've just discussed in the BL&G, and it doesn't matter what standard of football, netball or anything else, it's a new ball game, and there's only two sides running out there, and neither of them. Now, I don't know whether you know this, Phil, but this grand final creates a sort of a record. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, what record would that be?
Would you believe that since the inception of the AFL grand final system, no two teams have ever played in a grand final with no player having ever played, had the experience of playing in a grand final
That's
before?
Unbelievable.
Not one. So, obviously, other than the very first when everyone was in the same boat again.
Yep.
But no one's transferred from another side that's played.
That's an interesting stat.
Amazing. So, given that, and given that talent is talent, and you can argue that there's not much difference between the best and the worst in the top sides, that it's going to be who mentally is toughest on the day.
And it's not going to be a crowd factor either, they tell me, because they're going to virtually even the crowd out. And, I think it's 30,000 each or something, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Don't know the figure just offhand, but it's going to be an even crowd, so you're not going to have those 70,000, 80,000 Richmond supporters and 10,000 Crows. It's going to be pretty even.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that really sort of almost annoys me because of the predictability of people are saying, oh, why isn't the whole crowd going to be Richmond and Crows? And, half of them are going to the corporates and so forth. Well, the reality is that in the years when, say, the Crows aren't playing in the grand final, there are still people from the Crows who want to go to a grand final. And I don't think it should be lifted. You can argue over the proportion, but without the corporates, we haven't got the money, and without the money, we haven't got the game.
Yeah.
So you're never going to please all the people.
No, I mean, you can see both sides of the story, because they're going to be sitting there drinking their Chardonnay and not even watching the game.
Exactly.
And, the diehard Crow supporter that really wants to go there, they can't get there. I can see their point too.
Yeah. There's an argument for both.
Yep.
There is.
But no, the Crows, for me, I think that I just tend to think they'll win comfortably, but...
Well,
it's a funny game.
I think it's going to be I think you might be right. They're either going to win comfortably or they might just get knocked off.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we'll wait and see, won't we? It's not far away. So.
And listen, while we're on the footy, before we change quickly to the ASNFL, tell me, do you know the difference between a great player and a brilliant player?
Oh, no.
You don't? Well, I'll tell you something. A great player only believes half of what he reads about himself. and a brilliant player knows which half to read.
Well, there you go. Unbelievable.
Now, we'd better finish off, I suppose, with what was a really, again, probably affected by the wind, but a very good thing to watch, the SANFL, which I've been told we're not allowed to call. It's got to be referred to as SANFL.
Really?
So I've been told. Yes.
No, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, evidently that's the modern logo, SANFL. No,
SANFL. Okay, I'll quickly take over here, Rick, while you have a little cough. Yeah. But we had two cracker sides. I mean, two of the original great sides of the SANFL or SANFL.
Yes.
Sturt and Port. And, it wasn't a real spectacle to watch. I watched the thing from what go to where I was going to go down, but the flu stopped me from getting there. But, we saw a point the difference at the end of it, Rick.
Yep. And what a great compliment. I guess, really, not just because it's Sturt and Port, but 40,000 people there. That's a hell of an effort.
Mm.
The only thing, a bit like the way modern football's gone, it sort of finished up looking like a rugby scrum to me. The scores, tough game, 50-49. You know, I guess that's all it was, ball ups, stoppages, whatever. And I don't know how you actually saw it, Phil, but I thought Port did their very best to lose the game comfortably in the first half with it almost looked like the AFL side with their bad kicking and bad passing
absolutely.
And fumbling.
It was just a mirror image of that. Yeah. Absolutely shocking. I mean, we spent the game, didn't we? Just wasted it, basically. We had so many chances and, I should say we as in Port, and unbeknownst to me, you're Sturt boy,
well,
ex-Sturt player.
Ex-Sturt player, that's right. And a lot of people have found it very hard to come to terms with the fact that I actually support the Power in the AFL and Sturt in the
I didn't know that until Saturday at the footy you told me, and I just about fell off the chair. But,
yep, so I can remember as a kid standing in those all-night queues at Adelaide Oval to see those mighty Sturt Port Grand Finals, and they were the days. And it was a bit like that, except that, the game's become ugly. It really has.
Yeah, I mean, this like flooding and they flood one end of the ground and then they go to kick and there's no one there.
There's no one there. So, and you watch it and you think, well, why can't they kick it forward? Well, they can't kick it forward because there's no one to kick it to.
I'll go back quickly to the Barossa. That one lad on Saturday, he was on the wing, he kicked the ball and he had to go and chase and try and get the ball himself. There was not one person in their forward line. It was just a classic example of what's happening.
It was. I reckon he was only just over the centre wing. He kicked it forward and he nearly got it himself.
Yeah.
He nearly picked it up sort of just outside the goal square. Yeah. But it was just a symbol of the ugliness of the way the game...
That just brought back, what we're talking about here about the SANFL. It was the same yesterday in the SANFL Grand Final. And anyway, the best on ground, the Jack Hardy, was Fraser Evans from Sturt. Great player, fullback, and he played a cracker game. And
I think so. And it looks as though we're both going for the Crows. Time's up. It's good to be back, and I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to us.
And we got through with only two coughs.
How good was that? So it was a draw. All right, we'll see you next time. I'm Rick.
I'm Phil.